Hey everybody, what's going on? This is Ryan, your host for the Radio Live Transmission Podcast, and welcome to the second installment of the Head Scratchers series. This is a series on which I take a closer look at albums that sort of perplex me or give me some trouble as far as wrapping my head around them. The last time I did this segment, I talked about the Opeth album Sorceress. And this time around, I will be talking about the new album from the band The Melvins, which is called A Walk with Love and Death. So it was released on July 7th through Ipecac Records. Just a side note, I realized that way back on the episode 1 of Radio Live Transmission, when I reviewed the album Crystal Fairy, their self-titled album, which Crystal Fairy is a band that has both Buzz Osborne and Dale Crover from The Melvins in it, as well as Terry Genderbender from Les Butcherettes and Omar Rodriguez Lopez from At the Drive-In and the Mars Volta in it. And when I reviewed their album, I mistakenly said that the record had come out on Ice Pack Records. Now, I don't know what's going on with my brain lately, but it seems that I have some sort of mild dyslexia or something when it comes to reading. But anyway, it's Ipecac Records, as in Ipecac, the stuff that you drink that makes you throw up. And that is Mike Patton's record label. Mike Patton, obviously from Faith No More and Mr. Bungle and Tomahawk and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So just wanted to clear that up. So, A Walk with Love and Death is a double album. The death side of the album is an album full of more traditional Melvins songs, and then the love side is actually, and I didn't know this the first time I listened to the album, so it's sort of a little bit of an odd experience for me. But the love section of this double album is the soundtrack to a short film of the same name, being A Walk with Love and Death, by a guy named Jesse Nieminen. I'm probably mangling that, but this side of the album can be classified as, experimental noise or sound collage, if you will. So when I first listened to the album, it sort of threw me for a loop. And when I did some research on it before I recorded this segment, that's when I found out that section of the album is actually a soundtrack. So that changed my opinion of it a little bit, but not enough to really, make me fully embrace the record. So, but anyway, the death side, like I said, is a collection of more traditional, typical, if you will, Melvins tunes. Overall, the death side is pretty solid. Let me just mention, too, before I go into it, that this album was produced by a guy named Toshi Kasai, who was also the producer for that Crystal Fairy album that I mentioned earlier. So the death side of this album is pretty solid. I did have some issues with the sequencing of the tracks, which seems to be a common problem for me lately. The first two tracks on the death side are a song called Black Heath and a song called Sober Delic, are both over 6 minutes long, and like the majority of the songs on the death side of this record, they're sort of downbeat, and it really starts the album off on a kind of ponderous note. I thought it was an odd choice. So 12 minutes into the record, Not that these two songs are bad songs by any means. I mean, they're pretty good explorations of the sort of psychedelic rock meets sludge or stoner metal that the Melvins are famous for. But I just thought it was an interesting choice for them to spend the first 12 minutes of the record on these two tracks. Thought it was a little odd. But after those two tracks, the album moves into a track called Euthanasia, which is shorter than the first two, but it still keeps that sort of mid-tempo groove going, that pattern. But this song feels more like an arrival, and it's almost as if the first two tracks were like an extended prelude. It's also a heavier track instrumentally than the first two tracks. So, like I said, it feels like, okay, we've gotten we've gotten this sort of fluff out of the way. So let's get down to the nitty gritty here. So, and after Euthanasia, the album, the death side of the album moves into the track What's Wrong With You, which picks up the pace, and it's more of a rollicking track that sounds like it could be sort of straight out of like late 60s or early 70s psychedelia. It's a sound that the Melvins have definitely been playing with for a while. It reminded me of a lot of the stuff that they did on the album Hold It In from a few years ago. So that was a pleasant change for me, because I do enjoy that material a lot. I'm a big fan of the you know, the heavy sludgy Melvins, but I also like the I also like the more psychedelic sounding Melvins. So after What's Wrong With You, then the album moves into a track called Edgar the Elephant, which brings the tempo back down again to that sort of rock-solid groove that's so characteristic of the Melvins. And it's not all that memorable of a track, really, especially after What's Wrong With You. Sort of is a little bit of a lull, you know, in the album. But after that track, the album moves into a track called Flaming Creature, which, while it doesn't speed things up really at all, it feels more like a build-up, because there's, you know, there's some really odd sort of vocal stylings that Buzz Osborne had been using in the first track on the album, Black Heath, and that vocal style is coupled with some more off-kilter guitar riffs and some like washes of guitar noise that really give this track a feeling of like building towards something, like building toward a climax. And then the album gets to the track Christ Hammer, which isn't a bad track, but it feels sort of anticlimactic, you know, after that buildup of Flaming Creature, because the band don't really, you know, they stay in that same mid-tempo groove. I would have definitely changed the tempo there. I would have definitely gone for a little bit more upbeat track, or something a little bit quicker, a little bit more energy. So the next track on the album, which is called Cactus Party, actually finally changes the tempo again. And here, this is where Terry Genderbender of the band Lay Butcherettes and of the aforementioned Crystal Fairy gets thrown in the mix with kind of some surprisingly restrained backup vocals. I mean, I know they're backup vocals. I mean, you're not really supposed to draw too much attention to yourself when you're singing backup vocals, but she did such an amazing job on the Crystal Fairy record of just putting across this like slightly spastic, you know, manic personality, and I really enjoyed that on that Crystal Fairy record. So, you know, anybody that's looking for that sort of spastic recipe that Buzz Osborne and Dale Crover, you know, working with Terry Genderbender, cooked up for Crystal Fairy, they're going to be a little bit disappointed probably, but it was nice to hear her voice in there. She plays off Buzz Osborne very well, so I definitely want to see them do more in the future, whether it's more Crystal Fairy material or just more Melvins material, whatever they can come up with. I'd definitely be interested in it. So the death side of this this album is rounded out by a track called, I think I'm going to mess this up, but it looks like it's Card Boa Negro. When I say Card Boa, I literally mean the word cardboard if you just take out the R and the D at the end, so I'm not really sure what that means, but this track rounds out the album with more of that, you know, slightly psychedelic mid-tempo groove that this album, you know, relies so heavily on, you know, before it devolves at the end into a sort of like minute-long noise experiment, which I think sort of fits if you look at it as a like a bridge to the other section of the album, the love section, which you know, is very much a sound collage. So, you know, overall, the death side of this album is it's full of safe Melvins tunes. They don't seem all that interested in taking chances here or, you know, pushing boundaries. And, you know, the songs are listenable, and they're even catchy at times. But I really had hoped for more of the, you know, the fun-loving Melvins, you know, the the Melvins who would, you know, throw drum solos into songs at, you know, very random places, you know, the sort of Devil May Care Melvins experimentation of the past, you know, especially since the Crystal Fairy album showed that Osborne and Crover still have a lot of gas left in the tank. You know, perhaps their creative energies should be, you know, more frequently channeled into a side project like Crystal Fairy, where, you know, their ideas can be played off the ideas of some other folks. You know, I think that might make a more, you know, might make for a more positive, you know, more interesting outcome. So, all right, so from the Death side, the album moves into the Love side, which is a pretty much a collage of found sound, dialogue clips, which I'm presuming are from Jesse Niemenen's short film, and a lot of odd, sometimes unsettling splashes of synthesizer drone and jagged bits of acoustic guitar sort of layered into like an electronic wash that is reminiscent at times to me of like a John Carpenter film score, except it's on acid. So that's the best way I can put it. This actually isn't the first time that the Melvins have released an album's worth of sonic experiments sort of in lieu of traditional songs. The 1994 album Prick set that precedent. It's an appropriate name, I guess. But they also released the album Stoner Witch in 1994. So I gather that, you know, they did this on purpose to avoid, you know, a backlash from you know, disappointed fans who, obviously, I wouldn't blame people for being disappointed if they waited a couple of years for, you know, new material and all they got was this sort of odd sound column. But I think the majority of people would have been very unhappy with just that, you know, to hold them over. So this seems like a similar situation. You know, this particular double album. Seeing Jesse Niemenen's film would certainly help put this soundtrack into context for me. And if nothing else, the soundtrack's inclusion here piques my interest in the film. I haven't found it anywhere yet. I'm not sure if it actually is out yet. I've looked for it online and I couldn't find anything. But, you know, it seems to me that, you know, the Melvins help out a fellow artist here. And if that's the case, that's admirable. You know, I have a lot of respect for them for doing that. The Melvins have always been a band that did their own thing. They don't follow trends. They don't care. I don't think about, you know, the input of producers to a certain, to, you know, or I should say more the influence of record labels. Thankfully, like I said, they're on Ipecac, which is Mike Patton's label. And Mike Patton has, I've, you know, heard interviews with him where he, you know, he says that his label exerts no sort of influence over the material that their artists record and produce. You know, it's entirely up to them, which is the way it should be. So, you know, if the Melvins were looking to help out Jesse Niemenen and, you know, get him some exposure, you know, I that can't be a bad thing to me. So I think it's pretty cool. Like I said, I have respect for them for that. But sort of the inability to really put the Love side of this album into context without having seen Niemenen's film, along with, or I should say coupled with, the sort of one, you know, one note or one, you know, one trick pony sort of feel of the Death side of the album, you know, left me wanting a little bit. I was a little bit disappointed. This definitely isn't a record that I love. So I decided that I actually could give this record a rating, as opposed to the Opeth record that I talked about in the last installment of Head Scratchers. I decided to give this album a rating of 6.5 out of 10. Very hard for, you know, especially for, you know, an average listener, if I just stopped somebody in the street and I said, hey, listen to this. To me, the majority of people probably wouldn't be able to make it through the Love side of the album. Like I said, there's people that love this kind of stuff, but unless you're like a diehard Melvins fan or you're just a huge fan of experimental sound, then I don't really think this album is for you. So, but having said that, the fact that the Melvins, you know, have been making music since, you know, the late 80s, they formed in 1986, you know, in Washington State. And I think Gluey Porch Treatments, which was their first full-length album, I believe was released the next year, 1987, either 87 or 88. The fact that they're still going, that they still have gas left in the tank, is pretty impressive. So I give them a lot of props, the Melvins, for doing what they've done as consistently as they've done it for so long. So so for A Walk with Love and Death, 6.5 out of 10. And I'm hoping that next time around, you know, maybe we'll see another Crystal Fairy album. That would be really cool. Or, you know, maybe some sort of other side project where the Melvins can sort of bounce their ideas off of somebody else. I think that could be worthwhile. So, all right, well, that concludes the second installment of the Head Scratchers series for the Radio Live Transmission Podcast. Once again, I am Ryan, your host. I'd like to thank you very much for listening. I appreciate it very much. And you all have a good night.